Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the Razzball Fantasy Hockey Podcast. This is the summer edition. This is Reed, joined by Viz, as always. Viz, the weather's been pretty nice outside. We just added the 31st franchise to the National Hockey League. We just had our NHL entry draft. Things are pretty exciting right now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I got to give Vegas credit, too. I was there for about 2 weeks and just got back. And everywhere you go, man, there's people wearing Vegas stuff already. You can buy stuff everywhere. I actually feel like, you know, maybe it's only going to last a couple of years, you know, the initial excitement for having a team. But I don't think so. I think it's got a decent chance to be one of those random markets that just hits it off and does very well for hockey. And I'm already excited. I kind of want to go when the Sabres go there in October and see. But, I mean, I guess we should start with them. What were your just initial overall thoughts on, you know, what they decided to do? What did you like? What didn't you like? Either player-specific, strategy, whatever way you want to go with it.
So the way I see it, I guess there's like different angles we have to look at what George McPhee did. So the first is, how do you best build a team, and what's your realistic expectations of being a serious contender? Because in any sport, except maybe baseball, hovering around 500 or hovering in the middle or just outside of the playoffs and being stagnant is not what you want.
Yeah, it's almost like a death sentence in its own way. I mean,
right.
You become, I mean, to some teams, you know, it's good for the owner just every year you want, but to make the playoffs and but never be a real threat. You don't want to be the Atlanta Hawks, so to speak, or whoever. I completely agree with what you said.
Exactly. So the way I said, and of course, most of the people, most of the Twitter critics of George McPhee, a lot of the talk radio, a lot of the analysts who were critical of the way George McPhee probably have tons of experience doing this in an NHL like video game, like NHL 17 or something, where they like build their team from scratch. And I think it's a great like fantasy idea, but you also, if you're going with the idea of you don't want to be stagnant, you don't want to be middle of the road. So what does that mean? You either have to be really good, which with the players that were available on the protected list, I don't think was realistic. Or you have to be really bad for about 2 years. And the way I look at how this team was built, I think George McPhee had the idea of, okay, we want to have a couple young pieces, but we also don't want to win too many games. It was one of those, we want to be around where Colorado was last year in terms of...
I don't even know if they can be there.
You don't think they're better than that team?
I don't know, man. I mean, Colorado's defense is just as rough, but it depends how Fleury plays in net, I guess. I mean, he's got the ability to play well enough to steal some games, but this forward group is pretty rough. Once you get past the first
top line,
even,
yeah.
I mean, Neil, Marchessault, and Shipachev, that could do fairly well, but other than that, it's kind of rough. I agree. They had the choice, basically. Do you want to try to be competitive now? And I actually think they could have been in the playoff hunt for most of the year if they went all out and say they took a defense of Demers, Dumba, Manson, and DeHaan. That's probably going to do pretty damn well, in all honesty, especially if you fill it out with like Schmidt and McNabb like they ended up getting. That's a really good blue line. The problem is they were never going to have the forwards. And at the end of the day, is it worth it to them to do that well the first year? I mean, it would be kind of nice, but at the same time, they're probably going to sell out every game this year or close to it just for the initial buzz around the team. So why not try to get Rasmus Dahlin, or your best chance at getting Rasmus Dahlin next year, who's the best prospect in quite some time, or, you know, just, I guess, McDavid. But even if you go back before McDavid, he's a better prospect than any of the former first round picks a few years before that, even.
Yeah, I think if Rasmus Dahlin, if people don't actually know who he is, imagine the defensive version, like the defenseman version of what Austin Matthews was, except he's from Sweden.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that's the best way to describe it, is he is like trans he's a transcendent pro he's a franchise changing prospect on the blue line who skates like the wind.
yeah, I mean,
So
he's, naturally, because he's Swedish, a lot of people compare him to Carlson. I mean, at their ages, Dahlin so much ahead of where Carlson was. Now, obviously, I don't expect him to be that much better than Carlson, or we're looking at like one of the best players ever, which is a ridiculous thing to say for a 17-year-old. But the upside is there for him to be that good, and giving yourself the 25% chance or the 20% chance, the best that you can have for him, is probably the best thing they can do. They took Marchessault, who's got, one year left on his deal. They can flip him for the deadline at the deadline for assets. They could flip a bunch of these defensemen. They've already flipped the Thot and Schlemko, which we can talk about later. But I think they probably could have found some middle ground. I mean, to me, you look at Minnesota, and they were given Alex Tuch, or Tuck, who was a first round pick, for to take Erik Haula. Is that better than taking Matt Dumba?
No,
Is that better than even taking Erik Staal and just having him and deciding, you either keep him and now you have a true first line center, or you can get a first plus for him for absolutely the way he played last year. So a couple of the decisions I didn't necessarily agree with, like that one, for example. I mean, Anaheim's another one, but that one you can say they got Shea Theodore. That's fine. I'll take it. You have, whatever, 6 more years of club control for him to not take Manson. All right, I can understand that. Or Vatanen, but again, I get that. Taking Schmidt was a guy who played very well in the playoffs. I can get behind that. I like the Lindbergh pick from the Rangers. There was a bunch of things they did that I can agree with. Marchessault is another debatable one, Demers or him, but you got Riley Smith too, and only had to give up a fourth round pick for both. So in general, I think they made the right choice. I think, making Fleury the face of the franchise for now is probably a smart move, because they can call him a Stanley Cup champion and not be lying. I mean, he did win one for them back in the day, and he's been played a vital role in the run this year too. So I like what they did. The jerseys look nice too. I mean, I don't know if there's anything else you want to add about it. I mean, can you see this team even getting to like 60 points next year though? Like, they feel like
No, because there's definitely moving pieces. So the way I see it, James Neal has what, 1 year left on his deal?
Pretty sure.
I have absolutely no idea why some team just doesn't trade for him right now.
No, I know.
Because at the trade deadline, you're gonna have competition in trying to get him, and you know what that's gonna mean? Bidding. And then the price is going to go up. So I don't have any idea why a team just doesn't say that has cap space, a serious contender. If I'm the Dallas Stars, why? And I just and we'll get to the Mark Methot deal in a second. I would absolutely go to Vegas and say, okay, what do you want to give up, or what is it going to take to get James Neal? Because then you have a forward group that not let. I mean, it's got to be one of the scariest offensive groupings in that division
Right.
in the West. I mean, obviously, I think as long as McDavid's on a roster, you could have a bunch of pylons out there, and that'll still look like a scary forward group. But in general, I think Dallas, like, they're trying to win now, and I completely agree with that sentiment. I think they would be wise to try and make that move.
Yeah, there's a few teams in that you can go with for sure, and Dallas would be a great fit. He plays a heavier game, Neil, and you could play him with Ben and just beat the hell out of someone and have two guys who could score 30 goals with, I don't want to say relative ease in Neil's case, but he's done it multiple times, and Ben's expected from
Ben is one of the best setup men in the league, so
And the good thing is, when you're on a 1 year deal, if you're trying to trade him, basically everyone can fit him in for 1 year.
Yep.
So it wouldn't be an issue. I mean, I'm looking at the standings from last year in Colorado was so bad, 48 points, but Canucks were last with, or second last with 69. I mean, I don't even know if we can realistically expect them to get to 60 points. We mentioned it briefly, but given them more than like 25 wins, even if we go up to 27, which is a third of the games, which seems pretty courteous, to be honest, they still got to come up with, you know, six or seven overtime losses then. And I don't see any way that they're not in the bottom two. I mean, even Colorado, I don't expect to be that bad again. So
I'm trying to think, what team do you realistically think would be worse than Vegas next year?
Man, it's hard to say because Arizona just made a bunch of win now moves.
Okay, I think we're gonna have to talk about what Arizona is doing, and I actually love what they did this past weekend.
Interesting.
And we'll get into that in a second. I think one of the biggest losers of this weekend was the New York Rangers, but we can move into that in a little bit. Okay, so
as general far as bad teams go, I mean, I don't know. Could the Canucks will probably still be bad.
I don't think they're going to be nearly as bad. I think we're going to be.
I mean, I like a lot of the young guys at the head. I mean, Detroit, yeah. Depending, but Detroit too. I mean,
Detroit still has some young pieces.
Yeah, they have a lot of. It's hard to say, man.
Okay, realistically, what's the point differential between Vegas and who I believe will be 31st and 30th?
Oof. Double digits.
I'm going to say it's close to 12 points.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds about right to me. I mean, I could see Vegas. It might be more even. It really depends. Let's say Vegas gets to the low 50s. Someone, I guess, will probably be in the mid to high 60s. And it just seems likely that one other team will be there. Problem is, though, they're going in the Pacific, and a lot of those teams
they're gonna
are pretty
get,
good. And get
I was going
to
say, they're
right?
going to get bodied in division.
Yeah, so basically the Canucks and Coyotes are the chance, and like you said, the Coyotes have upgraded quite a bit. So, yeah, I don't know. I applaud them just going into straight asset accumulation mode. But again, it's like, was it worth the first round pick to take on Grabowski and not take DeHaan? Maybe you can debate that one. There were some of the trades that they made to not take certain players. Like, look with the Sabres. The Sabres gave them a six to not take Linus Ullmark. That's fine. They didn't need a goalie. Stuff like that makes perfect sense. They got Will Carrier, who's a nice, you know, bottom sixer for their team. Making, like, the Minnesota one is one that really stands out to me.
That to me was where I was like, wait, I don't think George McPhee knows what he's doing. Because that one, to me, I think we're in agreement on it. That one has no value in my book. I don't see it. How long has Alex Tuch been a prospect in the Minnesota system?
I mean, they drafted him in 2014. So, let's see, he played 2 years at BC. And then he had 37 points last year in 57 games in the AHL. So, I mean, granted, he's still only 21 years old. He just turned 21 about a month ago. There's still upside there. But, I mean, at the same time, if he's 21, Dumba's what, 22?
Something like that. It's got to be really close.
I'm checking now. Yeah, he's 22. He'll be 23. Like, I don't know. I'll take the sure thing. And now you have, you know, a legitimate blue liner who you can have for a decade more or more, you know, and consistently improving. Yes, he's not perfect, but he's only played 3 years in the league now. And, you know, we'll talk about it eventually for fantasy. I still think they're going to end up trading someone, Minnesota, but defensemen usually take that jump in their fourth year, so I wouldn't be surprised if Dumba becomes a mainstay in fantasy this year, in 12ers at least.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm just looking around and other deals that were made. I think the Columbus one is fine.
Yeah, Columbus didn't really have anyone, surprisingly. I mean, you're looking at like a Josh Anderson.
Which they wanted to protect. So they just made a we'll swap first round picks with you.
And it's worth it just to eat Carl. I mean, again, you have so many guys who are cheap giving up, or moving up 10 spots in the first round to eat Clarkson for 3 years. It's probably worth it.
It's worth it considering who they're grabbing at these positions. We'll get in, I guess we'll get into the draft in like 5 minutes or something, but the players that Vegas acquired in the draft, this is going to be one of those in 3 years, they're going to be actually kind of a ton of fun to watch
Yeah,
because I absolutely love the draft that they had. Love
they're
it.
the if we're talking about sleepers too, and one of the guys they took in the middle of the first round for fantasy, I'm a big fan of. Yeah, I mean, is there anything else? I mean, yeah, it's gonna be rough in the beginning, but I have faith in McPhee in general, and at the least, I think Gallant is a good coach and should be able to develop these guys. I don't think they're gonna get embarrassed. Their record's probably not gonna end up good, any good, but.
Okay, they'll be in games. They're just not going to win a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean,
They're not going to win most of them.
I'm checking now to see if I can go to Colorado's goal differential was, because I don't even know
I don't think it'll be
no,
that
yes,
bad.
Colorado's -112. I don't see any way that, I mean, it's possible. That's almost a goal and a half worse a game. That's incredible. I would put them more in like the 60 range because, again, having good goaltending will just keep you in enough games. And as much as I like to hate on Fleury at times, it's mostly because I just like Murray, and he's good enough to keep you in, the majority of games. So
Yeah.
they'll be in fine shape going forward. And for their sake, I hope they win the lottery next year and get that elite franchise piece that they desperately need.
Okay, and the last thing about Vegas, how many fantasy assets do they have for redrafts this coming year?
Oh man. So if you're in a, let's see, if we're talking an RCL, so a standard 12-man league, I don't even know if you're gonna want to play Fleury.
No, I don't
I
think you
don't
want
think
any
I
part of
think
Fleury.
you have to be in a deep league where volume matters for him to have much value, because he's probably, even if he has, say, a 915 and 920 save percentage, which isn't impossible, with the amount of shots they're probably gonna face, that's gonna be probably pushing a 2.7, 2.8 goals against. Like, I just don't see any way it could be that good. I mean, even like look at like a good Mike Smith year, basically. He could have a good save percentage, but there's no way that he's going to avoid burying you in goals against average, and the wins are going to be atrocious. So I don't see much there. I don't see much on the blue line, except maybe if Shea Theodore makes a team, which I expect after they trade a couple of these guys, he becomes like their top power play piece, and their power play actually could be pretty decent looking at who they have. I mean, looking at a first unit of like Theodore, Neal, Marchessault, Shipachev, and like David Perron, I guess it's not bad, especially if they have good coaching. We heard in Florida a lot of people complained about Gallant's power play, so we don't know how it's going to be here, but he's the only guy in the blue line that I could see having some value. If they keep Neal, him and Marchessault and Shipachev, and those are the only guys in my radar, and I don't even know if I would draft most of them. I mean, they would definitely be on my radar to stream. I could see taking them for the upside, but I don't know. I mean, do you feel like any of them have to be drafted? Again, the plus minus is almost certainly going to bury you. I would like Neal the most. I guess after that, I don't know. I mean, I know Marchessault just scored 30 goals, but I'm a little worried about him in this spot instead of being with Barkov.
Yeah, I think Neal. I think the entire first line of Vegas, the top line, Neal, Shipachev, and Marchessault, I think is worth drafting, not together. Oh, good God, do not draft them.
No,
You
no,
want
no.
one, you only want one of them. You don't want two or three. Because if you take two, your plus minus will be it just you'll lose the category every week. Defense wise, I'm actually thinking that Theodore and Nate Schmidt are going to be kind of like what Justin Falk has been for the past couple of years. And I said this before we hit record. Justin Falk has always been good fantasy numbers, has a lot of volume, but is always really bad in the plus minus. So if
Right.
you're willing to eat the bad plus minus, then Justin Falk is your type of defenseman. I think the amount of volume that they're going to play Nate Schmidt and Shea Theodore this season, like they're going to stumble into points.
Yeah, I mean,
Like
someone's
don't
got to
do
play the
not.
power play, so.
Yeah. So I have no doubt in my mind that they'll get points, but their plus minus is going to be bad as well. So I like again, it's one of those team construction things. It's how do you want to do this? But okay, so I guess moving away from Vegas, let's take a look at the draft. All right. So eventually we'll talk about some guys outside of it, but let's just talk about the top two. I'm sure a lot of people actually watched the draft because there actually was intrigue at who was going to go number one. It was either Nico Hischier or Nolan Patrick. It wasn't like in years past where, well, there's the number one overall pick. We all know who it's going to be. It's pretty straightforward. This one was a little bit more interesting. The Devils did go with Nico Hischier, the Swiss forward. The Flyers ended up taking Nolan Patrick to no surprise whatsoever.
Yeah.
In my view, this was always the right choice for the Devils. I think taking Nolan Patrick over Nico Hischier would have been a massive mistake. Fantasy wise, I feel the exact same way.
Yeah,
I think
I feel even more strongly about it for fantasy, to be
And
honest.
I think the I think part of the reason why is if I don't know if you paid if you watched the draft as it was happening
Yeah.
or the beginning of the first round when they did the NHL comparisons, they always do like the player comparisons, like what former player
Oh my
or
God.
current player do they compare it to?
I
So
hate
for
to
Nico
do that to you,
Hischier,
but
they compared him to Pavel Datsyuk, and if you watch his game, you can sort of see a little bit of it. Like he's really crafty with stick lifting, with puck retrieval, with protecting the puck, with just vision on the ice where it looks like he's got eight eyes spread out all around his head because he's just making passes that no one would even think to make. And then Nolan Patrick gets Eric Staal, and I was texting you before the draft, like probably an hour before the draft, and I think I told you Nolan Patrick to me is w like a Staal brother. Like you're gonna get consistent production, but for a top, what, a top three pick, top five pick, you need to have that dynamic player. Not
It
just
was
the consistent production. You want the dynamic, like game changing player. And between Nico Hischier and Nolan Patrick, if you're gonna ask me which one is the dynamic game changing player, it's Nico Hischier, and I don't think it's close. I think there's a skill level that's almost unmatched. And I think in this, if you're just comparing the two, it's not close in my book.
I mean, if Patrick became Eric Staal, that would be an amazing career, to be honest. I mean, Staal was just a lock for 70 to 80 points for almost a decade, and from fantasy perspective, big penalty minutes too.
Yeah, but when we were talking, I didn't
No,
say Eric Staal.
I'm aware. I'm just
No,
saying
I said Jordan
I
Staal. He
mean
reminds me of a Jordan Staal where he's got the physical attributes. He's 6'3", 200 right
yeah.
now. He'll probably add 10 pounds before the season starts. He's the kind of guy that's going to step in right away with an NHL body.
Yeah,
Nico Hischier's the guy. He reminds me of like a bigger Pat Kane in a way, except, without taxi issues. He's just the larger, like he's just a bigger, like frame wise, high skill cap hero or
yeah, no, I mean,
player.
I agree
Sorry.
his upside is much higher. I don't, I it took more time for me to be sure that he should go first. The more time went along, and I kind of swayed with public opinion on this one. I mean, for fantasy, I thought all along he's clearly the better asset. And going to, you know, New Jersey, it depends on if Golchuk state comes out or comes back and stays there for his, like, short-term value. I don't expect him to have, like, a great year this year. Otherwise, you know, could he get to 50 points? Yeah, I kind of would expect 50, but I wouldn't expect him to get to even 60. But the long-term upside is undeniable. I just want to say quick, too, that I just got so infuriated watching this draft, and they're doing all these player comparables, and they're comparing these guys to, like, all Hall of Famers. Like, they're you can compare, like, down a bit. Like, you get to a guy in, like, the middle of the first round, and he's getting compared to the Jaromir Jagr. I'm like, wait a minute.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
First off, are you talking, like, 1992 Jagr, 2000 Jagr? You gotta give me a decade here.
Yeah.
But
it's, yeah, I remember, like,
they're just so extreme, too. And just, you know, Owen Tippett went 10th, who I really like. He can score a bunch, but, like, he's Phil Kessel. This is comparable. It's like, that's, you're expecting this guy to score 30 plus goals every single season? Like, I don't know if I'd go that far. For
yeah, he, except he's one of those, draft picks I actually really like. Like, I think this was a very, there's a top two, and then there's pretty much like three through what
11?
It was. It like, yeah, it was like 11 or like 15.
Yeah,
and then and then there was like another large like grouping of players.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of these are much better than others. Like, just off the top of my head, I think Elias Anderson, mm-hmm, for the Rangers, who got the 7th pick in their trade with Arizona, I think they completely whiffed on that. I'll be honest, I have absolutely no idea what they were thinking with that. I don't think that's anywhere close. I think Michael Rasmussen, the 6'5 center that got drafted by Detroit, if they're looking for a Tomas Holmstrom, you know where you get that? And like the late rounds of the draft. Because that style of play doesn't exist anymore.
No, that's the reason
it's
why.
Not.
I mean, that's why Vilardi ended up dropping a bit, because, is, you know, if you have any skating questions now, you know, it's going to hang over your head, and that's why, you know, it's funny he goes to the Kings, a team full of guys who don't skate that well. I mean, Anderson is he's not going to be good in fantasy, but I'm okay with it. You know, again, this group is very bunched together, and you can do basically what you want. I mean, after Heiskanen and Makar went 3rd and 4th, once we got to the 5th pick, man, I had no idea who anyone was going to take from 5 down to, God, I mean, the rest of the draft, basically, there was no super clear-cut pick down the line. I mean, for this year, the top two guys are the only ones who I can see making a team, right? I mean,
they're the only two there.
Do it.
Heiskanen's going back. He's going back to Finland.
Right.
Makar is definitely
actual juniors now. I don't even remember what he's
doing. I don't know
for.
what he's doing, but he's not going to the show.
Yeah.
He can't. He's not big enough.
I mean, would you actually draft Patrick in a 12er?
No. I would draft Hischier, and that's it. I don't think I would draft Patrick. I think it's interesting that they traded away Braden Schenn. I think that opens up some idea,
mm-hmm,
but you already have Giroux, Simmons, Voracek,
Gossis Bear. So if he's going to get that 5th power play spot, then we can.
Yeah,
talk.
But what's it gonna be? If anything, he would be the guy who would be in front of the net, like screening. But
well, yeah,
you already have. But you already have Wayne. You already have Wayne Simmons to do that. So I don't really know where he would be the 2nd power play.
Saying if he took Shen's spot, then I would care. I mean, Schenn.
Yeah, but don't you? They already have Konechny, who's very highly regarded
in the
organization.
I mean, Schenn scored 17 power play goals last year. So I'm just saying, if he got that spot, we could talk. Otherwise, I mean, I don't know where they're going to play all these guys. Maybe Patrick won't even be up. I mean, even despite the straight, because Shen's been playing wing anyway. You have Schenn, or you have Giroux, Couturier. They still have Filppula, and they got Laterra in that trade. So they have 4 centers already. Could they play Patrick on the wing with, say, Couturier and Voracek or Simmons? That's not impossible, but I don't know. I like him fine long term. If you were doing a dynasty draft of rookies, do you still take Patrick second?
No.
You take Makar?
I think there are, if I'm looking at the top picks, we're just talking about this draft. I think the players that I would specifically look at, obviously Hishire. I think Nick Suzuki, who went to Vegas. I think Cody Glass, who went to Vegas. I think Cale Makar. I think Casey Mittelstadt for the Sabres. Listen, I know the kid couldn't do a pull-up and could only do and struggled with one bench press rep, but that kid can fly.
Yeah, going to Minnesota, all those guys fill out. I'm not really worried about it.
And then Owen Tippett in Florida. Though, to me, those are the guys that I think long-term have better fantasy upside than Nolan Patrick. Just out of the first round. I'm sure there's going to be some second and third round guys that are just going to play lights out.
And again, I don't want to just shit all over Patrick because he clearly should have been the second pick. Like, this guy has plenty of talent and is going to be in the league forever and probably be owned in fantasy for a decade, if not longer. It might not be great, but he's going to be the type of guy who's probably going to score in the 20s in goals on a regular basis. It's just not going to come with much else, I don't think. If I had the second pick in a draft of rookies, man, I don't really know what I would do. I would either try to trade first or probably trade back a couple spots. Gun to head, I might just take the gamble on Makar and hope that he pans out. I mean, the upside you could see through the roof, another kid who could scale like the wind. Yeah, it's just so hard to judge him coming from a junior league in Canada below the CHL. So it's so hard. You can't really, you know, he's going against kids who are not even worthy of being in the CHL for the most part. And here he is going fourth in the draft. It's kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Tippett again for the goal scoring. I probably wouldn't take Heiskanen. He seems more of the stay-at-home, steady type who's going to chip in some offensive, the modern stay-at-home, I guess, so to speak. But I don't see him as a guy who's ever going to put up a ton of points. And, you know, for a later guy, I do actually like Erik Brännström a lot from Sweden, who Vegas took with their third pick from the Islanders. He seems like a power play specialist to some extent, and for fantasy, that's a really good thing. And, you know, down the line, eventually, maybe he's on the point with Dahlin if they got him, and you're looking at an awesome power play, and he's someone you can probably wait a few picks on to get, but I think his upside is, for defensemen in this draft and fantasy, is as high as anyone's but Makar's.
Yeah, I mean, the forwards that I listed were just all, like, really high-skilled forwards. Pretty much, like, it's, again, it's not to shit on Patrick. I think there's a cap to his offensive upside. Mm-hmm. And when I look at Cody Glass, when I look at Casey Mittelstadt, when I look at Owen Tippett, like, I can see just stupid seasons, and I also look at the players around them too. Mm-hmm. I think when I, like, looking at Vegas, I think they're going to be a ton of fun in 3 years to watch. I think when I look at the Sabres, Casey Mittelstadt could be on a wing with Jack Eichel, hello scoring. Owen Tippett could be playing with Barkov and Huberdeau at some point, like, hello scoring.
Yeah,
I mean, it's one of those crazy things where you have to look at, like, what situation are they going into? And, like, Cale Makar, hopefully Colorado gets some other defensemen, because, good God, like, oh, I think
sure.
He's pretty much it right now, unless Nikita Zadorov, like, blows the doors off this season and out guns blazing. But
I like Tyson Barry, but there's talks of them trading him too, so I don't know what they're going to end up doing, but you look at their protection list, and it's pretty sad down the line. I mean, they don't have much. You know, Makar, I'm assuming he's probably still 2 years away, but who knows? It's hard to judge him, man. We talked about it already. It's a very unique situation that we haven't really seen before.
I think the big winner of this draft is definitely Vegas. I'm like trying to find another team that would come close, and I don't see it. At least just from the draft pick perspective, overall draft weekend, I think Arizona is huge. And I guess I'm going to explain why. You trade away the 7th overall pick and
D'Angelo, who I
D'Angelo,
like.
who I like too, but still a prospect. You trade away D'Angelo and the 7th overall pick. You get a starting goalie in Antti Raanta, and you get Derek Stepan. He can be your number one center this year, but I think you have ambitions of Dylan Strome or Clayton Keller really being your number one center. But like, so you get better in the short term. You have these young players that are coming up. Like, you already nailed your 2 first-round picks last year. Clayton Keller and Jakob Chychrun look like great selections. You had two of them last year. Like, I don't see any reason why. It's not like they needed the first-round pick this year. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, if
No,
they're trying, no,
I'm fine with
if
the
they're trying
trade.
to win sooner than later, then, and you already have all these prospects in the pipeline, you already have all these players that you know you're bringing up, then I don't know if the first round pick this year helps you.
No,
And to
I'm
get
good
what
with this
they
one.
did, I think is great. And I'll say it again. I think the Rangers dropped the ball. If you're going to lose Derek Stepan, take the risk. I don't really like the idea of drafting a safe player. Like a steady, if you're going for a forward, like if you're going to draft a steady defenseman that is going to shut everyone down, okay, fine by me. But if you're going to draft a forward that, yeah, he's going to be our lockdown center that's going to shut down other teams, no, you want to get the player that's going to potentially push for a scoring title in your first with your first pick if you're going in the forward direction. I don't understand the mentality behind drafting these safe forwards. I don't see the offensive upside of Elias Anderson. He could prove me wrong, but I didn't see it. I still don't see it. They could have done a lot better. Even if they took Gabe Vilardi, who had the skating issues, there's enough speed on in the Rangers organization that when he comes up, he doesn't have to be the fastest guy on the ice. So
I
I
mean,
don't
I
know.
don't want to judge the Rangers part of it until I see what they do in free agency, which we'll talk at the end, but they always have the ability to go get guys in free agency. They do very well getting guys to come to New York, and it wouldn't shock me at all if they end up spending the money that they save from Stepan very well. I don't have a problem with that trade for Arizona. It's the Hjalmarsson one that seems really weird to me from both sides. Like, even despite the Stepan trade, I don't think Arizona's going to be any good next year yet. I still think they're a little bit away. And Hjalmarsson seems like a completely win now move. Like, Stepan and Raanta, that's not necessarily the case, but Hjalmarsson, I don't. He's got 2 years left. It's a nice guy to finally have with OEL for sure, but they gave up on Murphy and Dauphin. I guess I'm more confused from that trade from a Chicago perspective
I think we
because
completely forgot about Chicago
I
this
think they
weekend,
had a
even though
worse
they.
weekend. I think they were worse than the Rangers.
I completely. This draft was in Chicago, and I feel like I completely forgot that Chicago was even involved in the draft. I do think we need to talk about what Chicago did this weekend, because what? So let's start with the Hjalmarsson trade. They and people are like, oh, well, they're moving Hjalmarsson off the books. They're going to save some money. They saved like
Yeah, no,
$250,000 on the cap. Like it wasn't actually a cap saving move for them.
no, Connor
So
Murphy is signed for, I think it's like a quarter of a million less, and he signed for longer too, so in that regard, it saved them nothing.
right. So then it's okay. Like I'm not really sure. Maybe they just like Murphy more. Okay, whatever. Then the Panarin for Brandon Saad deal. I understand you wanted to get Panarin's 4 years off the books and trade it for 2 years. That's, like, okay. But realistically, what is the window for Chicago to win a cup?
You mean the other way around. You wanted
to Saad's 4 years because Panarin's only a 2 year. Yeah. Right. Okay, sorry. Again, sort of same thing. Like, you lock in that contract more, because if Panarin has two more great years, hello, bigger contract.
For sure.
I think there's a question, and I was trying to explain it to a buddy of mine. In the NBA 3 years ago, before Golden State became the Golden State they are now, there was this giant idea of, okay, if you want to go win a title, and you're a free agent, you're going to go sign with a team in the West. And you would do that because the East had LeBron James, and you're just, like, you're not beating him in the conference finals. You're not beating him in the East, in any part of the Eastern playoffs. Maybe if you're on a stacked team in the West, you can have a shot at the title. I don't think it's there yet, but at some point, there's going to be this idea of McDavid is on Edmonton. McDavid is in the West. At some point, teams are going to be like, what's our window? Like, hope that someone beats Edmonton before we play them. Like, hope that another team's goalie gets hot against Edmonton. Because I think it's going to get to the point where McDavid's just going to take over an entire playoffs. He came close to doing it this year. And he's just going to destroy everybody.
Yeah, and it's not going to matter what's around. It's a little different in hockey because the nature of basketball is teams are – you're just bigger favorites on a game-to-game basis. But I agree. Edmonton at some point is going to be a clear cut. I mean, we'll get to it later. I'll save it. But, yeah, I mean, from a fantasy perspective, I don't really think this trade really changes the values of either of those guys, do you?
No, I think
they're who they are, right?
I'll tell you who it does help out, though. Wenberg? I think it helps out Alex Wenberg a ton. Yeah. I love Wenberg coming up this year. Playing with Panarin, like, Saad has plenty of skill. But if you're going to ask me who has more flashy skill, Saad or Panarin, or who has more scoring upside,
yeah,
Panarin. I said it showed again this past year in the regular season. Panarin was dynamite in fantasy hockey. I don't see any reason for that to change. I think Wenberg sets him up a ton from the center, and I think they'll have a better winger as well. Like, yeah, Panarin was playing with Kane, also had Anisimov on his line for most of the year at the center position. You have Wenberg at the center position, which I consider an upgrade.
Right.
And then, no, you're not going to have a Pat Kane on the left wing, but you're still going to have someone really good on that left wing.
Yeah, I mean, it might actually help Panarin a little bit now that I think about it, just because Wenberg really doesn't shoot. And that's the one reason why Wenberg can't go early in drafts. He only had 109 shots last year. So you're looking at basically an assistant, got no face guy. He's only going to give you assists and maybe power play points. He had 21 power play assists last year. But if you're taking this guy around 150th, say the middle of the draft, especially in head-to-heads where it's not going to kill you as much if the guy's low on shots, you got 50 assist upside now with Wenberg, I think. So, yeah, that's definitely something to consider, I guess. So to tie that in, I think Panarin gets a little bit more of a shot upside now that he's not with Kane too. And, you know, my guess is they probably want to keep Foligno and Atkinson together, which means the guy who I've liked for a few years now, Oliver Bjorkstrand, might actually play with those two. And if that's the case, I want to take him at the end of every draft and just hope for the best.
Yep.
For Chicago's perspective on that trade, I don't think Saad really changes anything.
Nope.
He's going to be almost 30 goals, or maybe 30 goals, about the same assists, no penalty minutes, with probably a very good to almost elite shot rate. I mean, he'll be a bottom end of the top 100 player, I guess. We know who he is at this point.
Yeah, does it come? I think for him it comes down to, is he going to play with Taze or Kane? And
I mean,
if he
I just kind of assume he's going to take Panarin's spot, but I guess I could be wrong. I don't know who else they would play there otherwise.
Because if he plays with Taze, I think that does help out Taze quite a bit. Although then, Pat, like, what's Pat Kane
I
playing
mean,
with?
we also can't completely eliminate the chance that the three of those guys are just together. Now,
And
I don't
that
really
I've.
like when Taves and Kane are together in the past. They haven't actually done too well outside of a couple playoff games, but I don't think that's impossible.
No, I think there's an issue with it though, and it's Marian Hossa having the skin disease and
Oh,
going
yeah.
either on the long-term IR or retiring, which I'll tell you right now, I think there's going to be another lockout, and there's going to be a lot of issues dealing with shit like that. Like teams are going to be furious over the idea that Chicago, who put themselves in cap hell, are pretty much gaming the system
I
on
mean,
that
they're
one.
to be honest, they're still screwed because Brent Seabrook, who I've been bitching about for a few years now, his contract is undisputedly on the Mount Rushmore of shit contracts now. He's got 6.875 million for 5 more years. Now
Yeah,
that
that's.
like Dan Girardi got bought out, and you know, there's a couple other bad ones around the league, Dustin Brown obviously, but Seabrook is up there, man. That is just 7 million of a guy who probably should be getting half of that. And you know, when you when your two stars take 21 million, it really, between the two of them, that really does hurt what you can do. And you know, now you got another 10.5 between Sadin and Isimov, and you got, you know, Crawford making 6 million, and another 12.5 between Seabrook and Keith, and Murphy's getting paid, and there's just no way for them to get out of it. And you know, trading Jalmerson is really going to hurt them. And I don't know, I'm already not really liking this team for next year. You know, it's way too early to predict what the over-unders for these teams are going to be, but I can already tell you that I'm probably going to like the under on Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the under in this team last year,
So
and
did I.
meanwhile
And
they ended up winning the division. But I think there's, like, if we look at the teams that are around them, like, I don't know if Minnesota's gonna be that much. I don't think they're gonna be worse in the regular season. Who else is in that division? I think Nashville's still gonna be very good. I think St. Louis got better this weekend.
the Jets are gonna be better too. I
I think the
mean,
Jets are
Dallas
going
is
to be
gonna get
better.
better. It's a
Dallas
good
is going to
thing.
be better. Like, at some point, there's only so many teams that can make the playoffs
Right.
out
I
of this
mean,
division.
it's a bit of a long shot, but if you could actually, I'm interested to see if there's a line where you can bet if Chicago misses the playoffs, because I don't think it's gonna happen, but I bet you the line is gonna be way too high, and it might be worth taking the gamble on. But we'll worry about that later.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, the
So, other
second.
quick
Yeah,
trades.
I was gonna say the second biggest trade from a fantasy perspective was probably Jordan Eberle for Ryan Strome straight up. I don't really get this move from an Edmonton perspective, especially considering the money they saved. They just gave it to Chris Russell, who's atrocious. You know, Strome's gonna come in, play in the top six. I assume he's gonna be with RNH and Lucic.
I don't think Merriam-Webster's dictionary has the words to describe how much I hate this deal for Edmonton.
I mean,
I don't understand it. Eberle had, what, 51 points last year in a really bad year for Jordan Eberle. That would have been a career high for Ryan Strome.
I mean, I know
I like
Strome is
I'm
still, what, 22 years old, but we're not, I mean, it's still a relatively small sample, but he's played, or he's 23, he's actually going to be 24, so, I mean, he's not completely some young, you know, spring chicken anymore. And yeah, he had 50 points that, you know, in 2015, but he's just regressed 2 years in a row, and I don't see the upside there anymore. We're working at a 258 game sample where he's got 45 goals. I mean, that's what is, you know, 13, 14 goals per 82 games. That's just not good. And
No, that's really
you
bad.
know, this is, you know, my first year I wrote for Res, well, I was really high on Strome for 2015-16, coming off the 50 points. You know, he only had only 8 power play points, so I thought, you know, maybe there's some upside for him to make a big jump in year three, and he has just gone downhill. Now maybe the change in scenery is going to help. It certainly can't hurt, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not considering drafting him even in like a 14 man league. You have
to no,
like the 16 Jordan deeper to consider. Yeah, Eberle is a different
story. Eberle, on the other hand, because I think he's going to play with Johnny Tavares, and now that is someone I'm interested in.
Oh yeah, sure.
I think Eberle can get back to. I think he can get to what's his career high around 70.
I think he actually had one year that was even like 78. He had one really big year. I'm bringing.
I think he's a like his floor is 60 points.
Yeah, he had 76 in 78 games his second year. Couple of 60-point years, and then you know the last 2 years have been down. But
I think the floor is 65 points for him this year.
That's too high. Well, let's just say to me, I'll say 25 goals with 30 assists with upside from there. I mean, I'm saying worst case, he's probably getting like 55 points. I agree. There's definitely a chance he gets to 65 and maybe even 70. He's not going to give you any penalty minutes. I mean, his career high is 24. He's got upside on the power play, too. He's had a couple 20-point power players, but it's been a while. The shots can go from anywhere to average to slightly above average. Maybe it takes another jump, too. I don't think he's a top 100 player, but it's not going to be too far off in my mind. I mean, you're looking at, like, compare him to, say, Ryan O'Reilly. They're very similar they're not similar at all in their actual hockey game, but their fantasy stat lines end up being somewhat close. O'Reilly's going to probably give you more power play points, and that's really the only difference. So that's the kind of range I'm looking at. O'Reilly always ends up being just a little bit outside my top 100. I'm going to have Eberle in the same spot, but there is upside for more from Eberle. I mean, he's got the upside to be probably a top 50 player if he panned out right. So he's a guy that I probably will be targeting to some extent. I don't think it's a guarantee that it's that great of a fantasy stat line. I mean, I love the trade for them. It's an amazing move for the Islanders. They have to do whatever they can to try to convince Tavares to stay. And getting Eberle for 2 years is great too, because if Tavares decides he does want to leave, we only have him for one more year. You trade him as a rental somewhere else and clean up value, and it's not going to, like, you're not committed on the books to him long term if the team decides they have to go in a younger direction. So I really like the move for them and for fantasy and reality.
Okay, so we talked about the Stepan and Ranta. I think probably one of the biggest trades, if not the biggest, was Jonathan Drouin going from Tampa to Montreal for Sergachev and a second round pick. So Jonathan Drouin obviously going to have great. He's going to be. I think he's going to be really good. I like that part of the deal for Montreal. My issue for Montreal, though, they just lost Nathan Beaulieu to Buffalo. They got a third-round pick back, which I think they sold like 10 cents on the dollar. Like, I think they did not get good value there. Sergachev, like, outside of – all of a sudden, they went from a defense core that had P.K. Subban, Beaulieu, and Sergachev in the pipeline to Shea Weber, Andre Markov.
Markov's even a free agent, I think. I think they're working with, like, Weber, Petrie, and they traded for Schlemko and Jordy Benn. I don't think they even have anyone else
signed. Yeah, but that's not good. Like, no, that, you know what that is? Slow.
Oh, yeah.
That's slow, and you know what the problem with slow is? Is that in this day and age in hockey, you can't be slow. Like, you have to have speed on the blue line. You have to have guys that have some wheels on the blue line, and they don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. And I understand you want to get a dynamic scorer like Jonathan Drouin on your roster. I understand that. I think Sergachev was the one player that they could not afford to trade.
I don't disagree. I mean,
I think he was the future of their blue line, because To me, it feels like Mark Bergevin is has this like distorted idea of what Shea Weber is,
Oh, absolutely.
and how, it feels like he thinks Shea Weber's like 25 or something, and that's just one not true. And you almost have to be blind to think that Shea Weber is going to have the wheels to keep up with all these forwards now. Like, I don't think Jeff Petrie is the fastest cookie out there.
No, it's
Like,
weird.
yeah.
They've actually done a fairly good job of assembling a fast forward crew now. It's taken some time, but it's their defense is just about as slow as it gets.
Right. And I like, so this is where we have to draw distinctions. People are going to say, like, the, who was it? Dale Talon said, "You win championships with defense." And I like saw the quote, and I like looked at the Pittsburgh roster that won the Stanley Cup, and I like vomited violently. Like, oh my God! Like, that wasn't defense. That was just pure scoring all the way through.
Yeah.
But the difference between Pittsburgh's defense corps that was in the playoffs and Montreal's defense corps going into the season, yeah, the players on Pittsburgh weren't the best on the blue line, but they could all skate,
Yeah.
or at least most of them could actually skate and keep up with it, the game. I don't know if Montreal's defense is going to be able to keep up with the pace of the game. They're pretty much going to rely on, can we outscore teams? But the way the game is moving now is you generate your scoring from the defensive outlet passes from defensemen moving up in the rush. And I don't know if that's going to be the same case. It's a lot like, to me, it's like a worse, it's a worse version of what the Rangers had last year, where the Rangers had McDonagh, and that was pretty much it on
Him and
defense.
Shea, yeah.
Yeah, like that was it in terms of rushing the, like rushing the puck. But at least they could do that. Like, who on Montreal are you going to sit there and be like, yeah, that defenseman's going to go like skate from their own end to the
Oh, yeah,
into the
that's
offensive
not
zone,
happening.
pull up and stop. Like, that's not going to happen. So, and then, yeah, you're going to have Carey Price in that. But I think there's going to be a lot of times that he's going to get hung out to dry.
My problem with this basically is I don't see the point of doing this. What are they going to do? Flip Galchenyuk now for a defenseman? Like, I just don't. It just seems like they're
Like,
going in circles.
at that point, is it, was it worth it?
Yeah, you're just switching guys to switch guys almost, it feels like. I don't get why they want to move Galchenyuk. I mean, from a fantasy perspective, we drew in. I don't think this really changes much. He's a high upside guy who you're going to take in the middle part of the draft.
Yeah,
I don't
but who's
know
he
who I
playing? Who's he
don't
playing
know.
with?
That's the problem. I don't is
We
he
talked about Jonathan Drouin last year and the year before because we were thinking he's going to play with Steven Stamkos,
Yeah.
or he's going to play in a line with Nikita Kucherov. Who's he playing with
I
now?
don't
Like,
know.
what center does he have? The center, like Philip Deneau, could genuinely be the top line center for
Yeah, if they trade
Montreal
Galchenyuk for
if
sure, yeah.
Galchenyuk's not there.
Deneau's
So
got speed and that's it. So I don't
like,
know.
they're not going to re-sign Alex Radulov.
No.
He's asking for like $7 million a year, which good luck, buddy.
Yeah.
They're not going to sign. They're losing Radulov, which was a well, like underrated large amount of
Oh,
their
yeah.
offense and scoring. And yeah, bringing in a young scorer like Drouin is great. I don't know if it's going to pan out the way Montreal thinks it's going to.
Yeah, no. I mean, I don't hate the trade for them. Again, like we talked about, it's
Yeah, I don't hate it, but I think they traded the one thing, they should have had
right.
one untradeable asset. There's one untouchable on Montreal, and it was
The
Sergachev.
funny thing to me is I would say it's two and they're about to trade the other one. I just don't see why you would consider trading Galchenyuk, but
I think the other scary thing is we know that Steve Yzerman's very good at trades and manipulating the rosters, and this trade was done in division. This isn't just in
yeah,
conference.
for
This is in
sure.
division. And if I'm Montreal and Steve Yzerman's proposing this trade to me, I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Let's take a step back. Let's think about why would he propose, like, why is this trade happening? Why is he coming up? Why is this idea a thing?
Right. I mean, they have been
This
wanting
was
to go to
Mark Bergevin.
Drouin for a while, which is kind of weird, but
Right. Or this is Mark Bergevin just making the first phone call. Steve Eisman's like, all right, there's not really much need to say anything else. Deal. Like, you don't talk your way out of robbing somebody.
Right.
I don't think they robbed them. Like, now the Tampa Blue line in next
I was
year.
about to say, like, so now they have him. He's almost certainly going to make the team. Slater Koekkoek probably make the team too. I don't love taking rookie defensemen. I wouldn't draft Sergachev in 12ers, but I do think from a dynasty perspective, this trade is going to help him a bit because
Yes.
there's a chance that, well, he'll at least be a second power play guy down the line. They probably want to keep Kucherov for Stamkos on the point, so he probably won't play on the first unit. But if he plays with Hedman at even strength and then gets power play time, eventually he'll be a guy who's owned in every league for sure. And I like the guys in Tampa long term more than I like the guys in Montreal, given their ages. I mean, Kucherov's still 22, so I like the move for Sergachev. I think. Well, let's go to Shen going to the Blues, which was a little bit of a surprise to me. I don't hate the trade for Philly. They got what well, turned out to be two first round picks basically, and Yori Lehterä. We already talked about Philly with Patrick and what their roster's looking like, so we can just focus solely on the Blues. Shen, to me, he's a nice player. He's a great power play player, which is where I think we're going to see the boost. I think he'll be on the second line with Steen and probably Berglund at this point, and go on the first power play unit. And I already was high on Pietrangelo and Parayko with Shattenkirk gone and presumably no shot of coming back. I think whichever one of those guys doesn't up on the first unit, which I think will be Pietrangelo, he's going to get a nice boost from Shen being there. I think it's a minor boost for all these guys, Tarasenko, Schwartz, but I think it is one. And overall, if he plays with those guys, I think Shen will be actually better at even strength than he was last year, and maybe sees a very slight boost again. He's a guy we both hit ranked right around the 100 mark, and I think he'll still be around that spot. I mean, you're looking at good power play, really good power play points, good penalty minutes, solid goals and assists. The only downside really is that his plus minus has been really bad. But now, if that goes away, maybe I'll end up talking myself, moving on him up into the top 100 a little bit.
Yeah. I don't really I don't really have a view on it for the most part.
Yeah, I mean they already were. I mean the Blues already were the eighth best power play, so it's not. I don't think Shen's gonna do anything drastic to it. But they didn't need a little bit of an influx of talent. Fabry's coming off the torn knee. You don't really know how it's gonna go. But now he signed Sabatka to a 3-year deal. He's gonna stick around. Barbashev takes a step. You got a really, really nice top nine there now. Looking at Schwartz, Stastny, Tarasenko, Steen, Berglund, Shen, Sabatka, Fabry, and Barbashev. I mean, that's a
Yeah,
pretty nice team.
that's a solid top nine. But that's still not the best deal that the Blues made this weekend. I'm just gonna get out there. They moved Ryan Reeves off their roster and moved up 20 picks in the draft and brought in a guy who can be a fourth line player, first call up, healthy scratch against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And to me, this is one of those where you almost wonder for Pittsburgh who was actually making the calls at the GM position for the last 3 or 5 years.
Well, I mean,
Since
Rutherford, he hasn't been there that
Rutherford got,
long.
well, since Rutherford's got, he got there what, 3 years ago?
I'm double checking now. I mean, he's been a horrible GM, and this guy's won, let's see, three cups now. It's just mind-blowing how many
To
dumb
me,
moves he's done.
this is one of those. Was Jason Botterill the guy who's actually the Penguins GM?
Well, I
Because
mean, the guy who put them to me, the guy who put them in place was Shiro, and then he got
Yes.
fired. But I mean, all the young guys that he all the young guys that he picked,
Well, and Botrel was still there. Like, he was under Rei Shiro and then was again kept by the Penguins organization. So, like, when I look at how Pittsburgh has operated in the past, like, I think the Phil Kessel trade was a very good trade for them. I think what they did at the trade deadline to get depth on the blue line, even though it really wasn't that impactful in the playoffs, I still think that was very smart. And then all of a sudden, their assistant GM in the waiting, gets plucked by the Sabres. And now Pittsburgh, like, that has to be by far one of the worst trades I've seen since the Subban trade. Like, I'm trying to, like, the trade deadline had almost nothing. This was terrible for Pittsburgh. This makes no sense. We just talked about how many times in this past year have we talked about how speed kills and that the name of the game is speed, and how many articles have you seen fighting being phased out of the league by the players themselves, not even by the rules? So no, let's go get the enforcer who doesn't skate very well, who not even just that, but actually takes penalties in the playoffs, not just goes out there and doesn't do anything in the playoffs, but goes out there and takes penalties and actually hurts your team out there. Like, why?
It's so
I don't
bizarre.
understand it. The only lo possible logic behind this is they're worried that Sidney Crosby is going to get cheap shotted over and over and over because it became very clear, and I think players around the league already knew this, but the Canadian hockey market started to pick up on it. The league, the national media started to pick up on it, that Crosby does a lot of things that if you actually called penalties like to a T, he'd be in the penalty box quite a bit.
It's like they're making it
I.e.
a test. It's like, we're gonna make our team progressively worse. Let's see how good Crosby and Malkin are, and they're so damn good that they're winning despite of what they're doing. It is the same thing in Edmonton. Like, they've traded away Everly and Hall now for a second pairing defenseman and a guy who's barely proven he's an NHL player at this point, Strome. So, I don't know. I didn't understand at all. You moved up 20 spots, which is a good deal for the Blues, and I believe they got Clint Costin, who was a guy I kind of liked coming into the draft process. So, maybe it'll work out for him. I don't know. I don't see how it could ever work for. They did get Clint Costin. I don't see how it could work out for the Penguins. I mean, it's just absurd. What's Ryan Reeves gonna do? Score you 7 goals and 5 assists on a season, and just do you really need this moral support on the bench just in case? It's just so stupid to me. It makes no sense. I don't know.
I don't understand it. I'm so confused. Like, Pittsburgh's got to be one of the biggest losers of the draft weekend. I don't get it. I'm genuinely confused by it. Okay,
Let's go to
the I
Calgary,
guess
actually, because
yeah, because that one actually is interesting. That's something we're gonna have to talk about. Okay, Travis Hamonic gets traded from the Islanders to Calgary. Hamonic with a fourth round pick for a first and 2 seconds.
I mean,
I
for
kind of like the
fantasy,
trade
I
for
for the
I
fan,
like the trade for both teams.
yeah, I'm fine with it too. I mean, for fantasy, Hamonic's like, if you're in a deeper league, he's got a lot of value, or a hits or blocks league. In a standard league, it's like pick him up at the end of the week if you need penalty minutes. But I don't know. I'm not worried about it from a fantasy perspective. I'm looking at it in real life. I mean, how many teams had a better top four than the Flames now?
Defenseman
Yeah.
besides Nashville, I don't think anybody.
Yeah, and I don't think they're that far off Nashville, to be honest. I mean, the second pair is much better, but I think Hamilton Giordano is right as good as Ekholm and Subban, honestly. So this team could do some real damage if Mike Smith can play well in net, which is a big if. We've seen years from him where he's had 9-15 goals against. I mean, take away his one crazy year where he was at 9-30, but he's also had a couple years where he's at 9-04. Now he's actually going to have a real defense in front of him for the first time in probably 6 years. Smith is a guy who I think could be incredible in fantasy. Now there's also
yes.
he flames out like Brian Elliott. It's almost the same spot as Elliott was in last year. But, my God, this team defensively is amazing, and they're only going to keep getting better. They got in that huge run at the end of last season. I don't think that was fool's gold at all. I think they actually have a chance to win the division this year. I think them and Edmonton are going to start. This is going to be the first year of their long-term battles. And I really like what they did. And you know, they probably have to get a better backup goalie now. You have to cover yourself just in case. But you have this top four. You have a, you know, the top line or the top set of guys. Kachuk's going to take another step. You hope Bennett can, you know, Backlund and Frolik have, you know, broken out fully now. I don't know. I really just like the Flames where they're at going forward, starting this year right now. But yeah, I mean, to Smith, I mean, I'm taking him as a number two goalie. But, you know, I think the upside's high from there. Even if he could be a number one. And I just, the more time goes by, the more I'm just liking more and more of these middling goalies, the Darling. Bishop now even on a bounce back, even Corey Schneider possibly on a bounce back, Lehner, Frederick Anderson, Mike Smith, these second tier guys have a lot of upside this year, and Vasilevsky, I mean, the list goes on and on. I think more and more I'm going to stay away from even taking a guy who's fifth or sixth on my board, because I don't know. I really like the depth of goaltender this year around the league.
Yeah. I like Calgary quite a bit this year.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, I'm a big fan of Calgary this year. And then I think what this does for the Islanders, because when you go back to the other part of the Hamonic trade, now they have the picks and the ammunition to go get someone like Matt Duchene. And now if you add Matt Duchene to a roster and you don't give up any of the players on the Islanders, you only give up picks. If you add Matt Duchene to the Islanders,
I can't see them trading him without getting current guys back. I don't know. I mean,
it comes down to does Colorado accept the fact that they're not winning in the next 3 years? Like, because realistically, I don't think they're close. Their defense corps is too bad. They have so many bad contracts. Their forward depth is an abomination.
I don't disagree with any of that. I just think they have to get some sort of young piece back in this process. If they're
do you though? If you give up a first and a second, and maybe like
too good for me to do that, I think.
Because we're talking about like there are other trades, like Carolina would give up one of its young defensemen and like a second round pick for Duchene.
I'd rather that than the first. I mean, Duchene's still only 26 too. I mean, it's not like he's, you know, getting up there. He's not even in his prime yet. If you could get Hanifin or Slavin, I would be dead. I'd be ecstatic. If you got even Kelvin DeHaan thrown in or something, or you got to get some sort of defenseman back. You just can't take another pick that you're going to have to take a defenseman, and it's going to take 3 years from that pick. So it's going to take 4 years for you to get this guy. They have to get some guys that can not make them an embarrassment. Bring guys there in free agency that you don't have to get them only because you overpay them so much. They have to make some steps forward. You can't waste McKinnon and Landeskog and Jost is going to be up now and Rotnin. And you got to start building towards something. Last year has to be complete rock bottom, and getting a few defensemen, even one in this trade, but they're a team who I'm looking at in free agency that's going to have to try to get, even if it's middling guys, they got to sign like three or four defensemen to just try to shore up somewhat the blue line.
Yeah, but this isn't, I don't think this is the year to this is not the free agent class where you want to be signing three or four defensemen to shore up your blue line. This is not a very good free agent defense or blue line class at
No.
all. Like, you're not signing Shattenkirk. Those bastards traded him away already. You're not signing Carl Alsner. Carl Alsner probably won't go there. Like, after that, I don't know what they have.
No,
Like,
it's not going to be great. There's no way it's going to be, but that it just any upgrade from what they had is going to be huge because it was just so bad, basically what I'm getting at. I just moving Duchene for solely picks just doesn't, I don't know. I would be upset if I was an Avs fan to not get something closer to a current return than solely futures. I just don't think that would be enough in my mind. What ends up happening, I don't know. Someone I think is going to end up giving them a good enough offer that they'll take it, whether that is Carolina or I don't see Nashville caving in, so that's not my
Nope.
foot.
I think at some point,
I mean,
Colorado's.
if I was Carolina, I wouldn't do it though, I don't think. I wouldn't give up one of
No.
those guys, so.
No. I don't think I would either.
So I don't know. It's just we talked about it a couple months ago, and it's just worth reiterating. Like Joe Sakic can't do Duchene trade wrong. No matter what he decides, he's got to make sure he got enough bag. You can't sell him for 50 cents on the dollar. Not when he still has a couple years left on the deal, and you know at some point you're gonna get a good offer. It's gonna happen. He's too talented for you to just not give him away, but close to it. So. I don't know. I'm interested to see what happens. Maybe the Islanders can pull it off. If they do, it would be a great move, obviously. And there's another goalie, Greiss, that I would like plenty too. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just a wait and see approach, I guess.
Yeah, now this is gonna sound crazy. Think about what the Metro Division has done this weekend alone.
Yeah, it's.
Okay, so you add Jordan Eberle, you add Nico Hischier, you add Nolan Patrick, and you add, who am I missing here? I'm missing some. Oh,
Panarin.
you add Panarin. That is sort of insane. For just one division, and not like if you're in the Atlantic, in my mind, you have to finish in the top three in your division, otherwise you're not getting the playoffs.
I'm
Like, I think
shocked.
both wild cards are going to go to the Metro Division here.
Yeah, I don't
So.
disagree at all. That division is probably the best in sports. I don't know what else it would even be.
Because what's the bottom of that division right now? The Devils, but
Probably
you
the
can,
Devils and Flyers, but I don't need
yeah.
to.
But the Flyers, I don't think are going to be as bad as they were last year. They just like,
It
I
depends
don't
on
know
the
what it
goal. It
was,
really depends on the goaltending with them.
right? And then the Devils, that was a historically bad year for Corey Schneider. I don't expect that again. What I do expect though is a big leap for someone like Pavel
It really
Zacha.
depends if they can get Kovalchuk in there, because I mean that changes everything. I know he's 34, 35 years old, but that kind of offensive talent just changes everything for that team if they could get him in there. So, yeah, I mean they could bounce back too. And I mean I already really like Carolina, and I was kind of lukewarm on the Islanders, but getting Eberle does help. And obviously the other teams all made the playoffs already, and I see no reason for any of them to drop off. Even the Rangers without Stepan, they still have plenty of young guys who can step up too. And I don't know. I still think they'll be fine. So that division is just a bloodbath. There's no way around it. There's no weak link. No, not like the Central's got Colorado, the Pacific's got Vegas, and the Atlantic just doesn't have the top teams like the other ones do. And you could say Detroit could be in that bottom tier. That Metro division is just unfair. I feel bad for those teams, in all honesty.
Yeah. Okay, last deal that happened that we should talk about pretty much just happened yesterday. It was Mark Mathot, who was picked up by Vegas in the expansion draft, gets shipped to Dallas for a 2020 second-round pick. A lot of twos there. And the seventh-round pick that Dallas had, which is a goalie prospect. Mm-hmm. Not going to really look up the name of the goalie because whatever.
It's a goalie. He's ways away.
Yeah. Dallas now all of a sudden... We talked about before, I would love it if Dallas went after like a James Neal, also off Vegas, but their defense kind of looks pretty okay now.
It's getting there at least. I mean,
I kind of like Dallas quite a bit this upcoming year. I think last year was a fluke compared to what they should be.
Yeah, I think this trade is going to help Bishop more than anyone. Just having more quality blue liners in front of him is the key. I mean, if Bishop plays well, not even like to his year 2 years ago, if he just plays well, his team is going to get a massive upgrade, not because Niemi and Lehtinen were so bad. So, Mathot's irrelevant from a fantasy perspective outside of his impact on others, but I like Dallas plenty. I like their chances probably to get back in the playoffs this year, too. I know it's a bit away from making any predictions like that, and you're right that they do need another forward or two, but the top end talent's there, and the blue line is starting to see progress. I mean, you're looking at Lindell, Klingberg, Mathot, Hamhuis, Johns, and Honka. It's not so bad, especially compared to how it's been.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting because that now they actually have a goalie in Dallas.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, when was the last time they had that Marty Turco?
Yeah, probably.
Like, it's been ages since we've been able to sit here and say, yeah, Dallas actually has a number one goalie. There's no, like, all 1A, 1B. There's no 50-50 splits. No, it's...
Yeah. No, yeah, like, when Lehtinen first got there, he was all right. But the last 3 years, he's just been hilariously bad. So, we could talk about that. Just a couple quick hitters before we're done news-wise. Bishop signed a 6-year deal there. We talked about it when the trade happened. We both like him plenty there. Darling signed with Carolina. We were both big fans of his, too. Oshie got an 8-year deal for $5.75 a year. What are your thoughts on that?
The contracted, like, the eight. How do I want to phrase this? The AAV is good. 5.7 is very good. The 8 years is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, that's...
Realistically, Washington's window is, 2 years right now. I think they have a 2-year window to win it, and if they don't win it in the next 2 years, good God, it's gonna hurt.
I think you're going to see a bunch of contracts like this one, and... My guess is that these teams are going under the assumption that there's going to be another buyout in the next, if there is another lockout, and they will just buy out Oshie at that point. It wouldn't shock me. I think we're going to see a lot of crazy longer 8-year deals that might get really bad at the back end. I mean, Oshie's already 30 years old, so we're talking he'll be 38 when that deal's done.
Yeah, I think there will be a buyout thing. I also think they're banking on the cap going up.
Yeah,
and
that too.
I think that the cap will go up. I think it'll steadily go up, so it won't hurt as much. But is 38-year-old TJ Oshie making 5.79 or 5.75 million going to be any good to anybody?
I don't know if 33-year-old Oshie, 34-year-old Oshie's going to be, let alone at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is good for the short term to keep it down, and they guess they can go from there. But Gostisbehere got 6 years, 4.5 a year. Seems like a good move for Philly to lock him up, despite having a bad year last year. Good for him to get the long-term security. I think it makes sense for both sides. Kings signed Toffoli and Pearson. I believe Toffoli was 3 years, Pearson was 4. They have no other wingers on the roster, so they didn't really.
They kind of needed to do that.
Yeah, and you want to talk? I mean, the Sabres hired Phil Housley, Florida hired Bob Bugner, think that's it from last time.
Yeah, those were the only two coaching vacancies. Well, we also now have one in Arizona.
Oh yeah, so that's the funny thing that I forgot to bring up too before. Like, Dave Tippett leaves after 8 years. Day after he leaves, they make these trades. Like, he's got to be so pissed. They do nothing for him for so long.
Or
he was the reason why.
Or he was the reason why they didn't make those trades. And John Chakra?
Yeah.
Chakra?
I forget how you pronounce it. But
I think pretty much was like, all right. I think we're going to do these trades. And Tippett's like, no, I don't want to.
Yeah.
It's like, well, then we're going to have a problem here. Yeah, like, get, like, hop on the train because, mm-hmm. like, we're moving here.
Yeah.
I like the Housley signing for Buffalo.
Yeah,
like,
sort
of. Everyone knows that their biggest issue was defensemen and their blue line. So you bring in an old legend on the blue line, a guy who was the defenseman coach for the best defensive grouping in the NHL. It kind of fits. He's going to be a guy that, like, the Buffalo's young enough where they're going to respect the fact that Phil Housley is there. It's not like, oh, well, he's a well-respected coach who's won multiple Stanley Cups. It's not going to be like the Dan Bylsma approach. It's going to be, this guy's he is in the Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah.
I'm thinking.
Yeah.
It's going to be, this is a Hall of Fame player who could probably beat us in a game on 3-on-3 right now. Like, we should probably listen to what he has to say. Like, he knows what he's talking about. And the tempo,
yeah,
Phil Housley's always said,
plays,
like, the style of play is going to be different. And I think it's going to be more conducive to the players that Buffalo's going to have. I don't think Dan Bylsma's style fit at all what Buffalo wanted to do. Gianta wants to sign back with Buffalo, but if I'm the GM, Bottrell, just gonna say thanks, but I think we're going in a different direction.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, Bob Bugner. Honestly, I don't really have much thought on it. Like,
he's worked his way up. He did coach briefly with Columbus, but decided he wanted to go back to Windsor. Everyone seems to give rave reviews about him, so I'm excited for him.
It could work.
They could bounce right back into the playoffs. I actually kind of expect it. So I think it's a good choice. It's not a retread, which is a plus. So anything you're looking at free agency wise before we wrap this up?
I don't know so much if it's going to be free agents. I think it's going to be the trade market. There was a shockingly low amount of trades at the draft, and I think right before free agency is where we had our firestorm last year with the Hall, Larson, the Subban for Weber trades. It was like the day before free agency started.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm not so much looking for the players because I don't think this free agent class is very good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be the trade market. And if Matt Duchene gets moved, I think it'll be right before free agency starts. I think you're going to see, like, if the Sabres somehow move Evander Kane, if they want to, I think it'll happen right before free agency starts. I think it's like a pseudo trade deadline for these NHL teams,
because
they're gonna have their draft, they're gonna have their draft done. That now they're focusing on their own rosters. They have free agency. They're gonna realize, well, we need to add pieces, but this free agent class isn't how to do it. We're gonna have to go the trade route. Okay, well, we need, and then teams who want to sign free agents, well, if we're gonna make a trade, we need to make this now. So we'll. And then figure out our cap situation so we know what we can offer a free agent.
I mean, it goes both ways, though. I mean, if the Sabres hypothetically sign Shattenkirk or think they're going to sign Shattenkirk, well, they're not going to trade Kane. But then if they end up not getting him, then maybe they do trade Kane for a defenseman kind of thing. You're right, though. This class is really weak. I mean, I'm interested to see where, like, a guy like Hanzel goes a little bit. Alsner, and if anyone comes close to meeting Radulov's money demands, I highly doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it.
And where Shattenkirk goes, I mean, I could see him getting it for like 2 years. I mean, I would feel fine giving him 2 years, $15 million for Radulov, but if he wants any term like he reportedly does, it's just not going to happen.
I would not be surprised if Vegas pulls the trigger on it.
I mean, it's not a bad idea.
Or it could be one where the Devils give him the money, because then, sure. Hello, Kovalchuk. Like, yeah. Now you have your Russian buddy here. Although I think the Devil's defense corps,
it's as bad as anyone in the league. I mean,
you're
looking at even guys that I like kind of like. You're looking at John Moore, Andy Green, Severson. Like, I don't care for Ben Lovejoy, Dalton Prout, Santini. Like, it's just really, really bad. So there's a team, Brendan Smith's a guy who might cost less than I think. Would be a great fit for a lot of teams. Now, I think the Rangers are trying hard to get him back, but who knows if it'll happen or not.
Yeah.
It's a lot of – I don't even want to say second-tier guys. I think that's doing it too much – it's giving them too much credit. I mean, a lot of these guys are NHLers, but bottom end and not going to see much of an impact here. But
exactly.
All right. I think we've – run long enough for now.
I think we've hit almost every topic we can.
We'll probably do one more in mid to late July, recapping if there are more trades and what did happen in free agency, if it matters, unless it's just for if no trades happen or little trades, then maybe we won't bother. But the plan will probably be to get back in the full swing of things come August time. So again, if you want to, anything you want us to talk about, put in the comment section. If you or you know someone who wants to sponsor the podcast starting in August when we pick up things again, reach out through us through Razzball or however, Twitter, however you want to do it. That's about it for now, I think. Anything you got?
Okay.
Got Reed?
No, I think we've gone. It started thunder and lightning. I feel like I'm worried the power is going to go out or something.
I know. We've already had a few soccer games canceled because of weather, and we have a makeup game tonight, and with the way things are going, our makeup game will probably have to be made up.
Yeah, I got a beach volleyball game tonight, and it's at 7 o'clock. I'm not so sure we're going to be able to get to play that one. Yeah. Or if we are, that sand's going to be so cold.
Yeah, I know.
It's going to be so cold. Good God, it's going to be so cold. But yeah.
All right.
In case you guys didn't notice it, I'm not a big fan of the cold sand while playing beach volleyball. I like putting my body on the line out there. But
no surprise.
Diving left and right to make plays. But
all right. Enjoy your 4th of July weekend, everybody. Extended weekend. Maybe you get a little time, check out what's going on in hockey. Hopefully your team signs somebody, and we'll be back in a few weeks at some point. Take it easy.
Yep, take care, everyone.